Your film is now ready to be shown.
Good morning. I'm Justin Hendricks, editor of Tech Policy Press, a nonprofit media venture intended to provoke new ideas, debate, and discussion at the intersection of technology and democracy. In conflicts around the world, social media platforms make policy and content moderation decisions, as well as operational and business decisions that can have a substantial impact on free expression, sometimes to the benefit of one side or another, whether intended or not. In September 2022, the consultancy BSR released a report on the human rights due diligence of Meta's impacts in Israel and Palestine in violence that occurred there in May 2021. The report's methodology included a review of publicly available information, interviews with Meta staff and affected individuals and stakeholders in Israel and Palestine, as well as elsewhere, written communications between affected stakeholders and Meta, and a range of data from Meta about its moderation practices, both human and automated. The report says that Arabic content had greater over-enforcement on a per-user basis and that proactive detection rates of potentially violating Arabic content were significantly higher than proactive detection rates of potentially violating Hebrew content. The report says one reason for this is the complicated nature of speech related to Hamas as a governing entity, which Meta's content moderation systems appear to have difficulty discerning from praise of the organization as a terrorist organization. The report notes that, quote, the contrasting status of Meta's content moderation system for Arabic compared with Hebrew may have resulted in unintentional bias via greater overenforcement of Arabic content compared to Hebrew content, even when adjusting for population size, unquote. The report finds a variety of factors at play, including, quote, a possible insufficient routing of Arabic content by dialect or regional expertise, which would ensure that outsourced reviewers clearly understand the dialect of the content they are reviewing, as well as related cultural contexts that might be important for informing decisions, the use of classifiers for Arabic content, whereas there has been no functional classifier for Hebrew content, and the fact that Arabic classifiers are likely less accurate for Palestinian Arabic than other dialects, both because the dialect is less common and because the training data, which is based on the assessment of human reviewers, likely reproduces the errors of human reviewers due to the lack of linguistic and cultural competence, unquote. The result, BSR said, is that Meta's content moderation system may not be as precise for Arabic content as Hebrew content, and that various instances of unintentional bias it observed in Meta policy and practice, quote, combined with broader external dynamics, does lead to different human rights impacts on Palestinian and Arabic-speaking users, unquote. Today, in the war in Gaza sparked by the Hamas atrocities on October 7, 2023, there are signs that these dynamics remain in place. Today's guest is a policy and advocacy director from the nonprofit Access Now, which has worked on digital civil rights, connectivity, and censorship issues for the past 15 years. Along with other groups, Access Now has engaged Meta over what it says is the systematic censorship of Palestinian voices. I spoke to Marwa Fatafta, who is from Palestine, during her recent trip to New York.
My name is Marwa Fatafta. I work as the MENA Policy and Advocacy Director at Access Now.
Marwa, I'm glad you can join me today. We're going to talk through some of the activism that you've been doing recently and some of the interactions in particular that you've had with Meta and its senior executives. I want to ask, though, just to start, what has it been like to do your job in these last several months? Clearly, you've been up to this for a bit, and these issues have been at the fore for quite some time, but things have changed dramatically on the ground.
Thank you, Justin. How would I describe the last 7 months? It's been a roller coaster, quite honestly, a frustrating journey as well, working with companies on issues pertaining to Palestine, Israel, Palestine. I have been working on content moderation issues in Palestine, where I'm from, for almost a decade. And I know from experience that whenever violence escalates on the ground, it's so predictable that we will see companies clamping down on Palestinian or Palestine-related content. it's just predictable as the sun rises and sets. October 7th happened. It took everyone by surprise. And non-surprisingly, with the company's reactions, they have been just removing disproportionately Palestinian content or Palestine-related content. And I emphasize on Palestine-related because we're not just talking about content coming from Palestine per se, but as just in this, the war in Gaza has triggered global conversations around the world. It's felt in different spheres, and naturally people who are engaged on the issue are quite active online and sharing information, accessing information. And with, to that end, people are being impacted everywhere. And so we have been meeting quite regularly with companies, especially in the very beginning, just to say, look, this is what we see. We've been escalating cases. We've been also demanding transparency and answers to some of the actions we've seen. For example, comments with a Palestinian flag being removed or journalists being suspended. We've had photos of people injured, dead people from Gaza being removed on Instagram because the platform deemed it to be pictures of nude people, you know, to be removed under sexual nudity and sexual activity policy, things like that. But most importantly is that because it's a structural issue, because it's been going on for quite a long time, we're talking about a systematic pattern of censorship. And even though Access Now and many other organizations have been pointing to Meta specifically about those patterns. And then there was, as you know, the BSR report that came out in 2021, which showed clearly that Meta over-moderates Palestine-related content, especially in Arabic language. It under-moderates hate speech. And that's a whole other problem that we should absolutely discuss today. It's been frustrating because you feel that the company is, I don't know, like they're taking a swim at the beach. They're super relaxed. They don't see the urgency. They're not willing to address the issues at a structural level. Like they only are happy to engage with civil society when we just escalate like a single or a few cases, as opposed to really like understanding that this is a big moment. We're talking about genocide and internet shutdowns. We're talking about lack of foreign journalists being able to report or international media being able to report from the ground in Gaza. So every piece of content is important. And they should allow people or at least make exceptions and carve outs as necessary to allow people to express themselves freely and safely, which they've done in the context of Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. But yeah, Palestine, unfortunately, is not that important for a big company like Meta, not financially, not politically, obviously. The consequences of their censorship are, at least to them, are pretty much minimal. As I said, like it has been a frustrating journey. But on the other, you know, on the positive side, I see it extremely important to do this job, to hold companies accountable, to scrutinize their policies, and also to document how discriminatory their content moderation systems are, because they, of course, they always gaslight civil society and their general audience that this is never intentional. As a matter of fact, if you look up Meta's blog post on, or their statement on and their newsroom immediately following October 7th, they'll say that it's never our intention to silence a particular group of people, but de facto they are, and therefore it's important to keep documenting and monitoring and showcasing how that's what they say and what they do are two extremely different things.
We have discussed this issue of the kind of double standard in the region before on this podcast around the time of the BSR report. And I do recall the basics of it. One of the things that seems to be apparent is a real incongruity in terms of the number of resources that each side has in this conflict to report content, to flag content to the platform. Does that continue to be the case in this current situation? Or have there been more activist supporters mobilized on either side that have changed that balance at all?
So what happened in 2021, and for listeners who are not familiar with the events of May 2021, it mainly revolved around protests in East Jerusalem, in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah, basically people mobilizing against the imminent eviction of their homes for Israeli Jewish settlers to move in. And people were mobilizing online as well as on the streets. And as I said, the moment people started mobilizing online, we noticed the automatic removal of hundreds upon hundreds of posts. And that was really an egregious level of censorship that was just so pronounced that it was hard for Meta to, as I said, like to manage its way around with the usual shenanigans, like, oh, it was a technical glitch, which they, of course, they did say it was a technical glitch. They always do. But after so much pressure from civil society and then the oversight board that looked into a case from that time and again, like asked for an independent investigation into Meta's actions, and they contracted BSR, Business for Social Responsibility. And the report came out very clear, like one, there is discrimination, although the report claims it's not intentional. That's a conclusion I don't necessarily agree with, especially when you've been pointing to the company about this discrimination for quite a long time, and they continue to choose not to address it. They also found that Palestinian content is over-moderated, Hebrew content, including hate speech, is under-moderated. They also found that the company's terrorism-related policy, which is called the Dangerous Individuals and Organizations policy, was disproportionately impacting Palestinian speech. And even though the company doesn't disclose who is designated as a terrorist, we know from a leaked version that the majority of individuals and orgs are from Muslim or Arab countries. So no surprise that over-enforcement of that policy leads to the disproportionate censorship of Palestinians and other Arabic-speaking users. Sorry, I digressed a bit, but what I wanted to say is that what happened in May 2021 and what's happening now is just a million times worse. It's really like, it's hard for me to explain. It's unprecedented. And similar to it is the level of censorship and crackdown on speech. And there, to go more directly to your question, of course, you see the asymmetries of power. You see the asymmetry of an occupying force that has dedicated resources, A, to monitor and submit requests for removal. We're talking about the Israeli cyber unit, which is housed within the Israel's attorney general's office. Its job is to report content to social media platforms on a voluntary basis, meaning that the content is violating the terms of services of the companies themselves and not necessarily Israeli law, which skips a legal or a judicial process that should take place for censorship. And it also means that those types of requests are not captured by companies' transparency reporting. So effectively, content is being removed at the request of the Israeli government, and users don't know that they're being censored because of government. And in this case, we're not talking about, again, like we're not talking about people in Palestine or in Gaza. We're talking about people in the US, people in Europe, people from different parts of the world who are being censored and their rights of freedom of expression violated at the request of a foreign government. And the cyber unit, of course, never shies away from sharing like how diligent they are at their work. So we know that they've submitted tens of thousands of requests to companies, and the compliance rate remains up in the 90s. I think in November, they said that the compliance rate with their request was up to 92 or 94%.
So let me ask you a kind of clarifying question on that, because one might say folks can report, but the company has to decide whether this is violative of its policies or not. So if the rate of takedown is high, it would suggest on some level the company has determined that the content it was presented with did violate its policies. Is that what you're seeing in practice?
So here's the thing. Companies push back against transparency because at least some, their line of thinking is If we publish that type of information, it would encourage other governments to report to us, or it would trigger like a backlash from governments, like, we're reporting that content to you that violates your own terms of services. Why aren't you complying? I think the question here is not whether the content itself violates the terms of services, and also the terms of services of those companies are questionable, especially when it comes to Israel, Palestine. And we can talk about some of those discriminatory policies. So I'll park that issue for now, but I think as a user, you have the right to know why your content is being removed. And if it's, especially if it's coming from a government. And when governments dedicate a lot of resources, and at the end of the day, we're talking about powerful actors, if a government knocks on companies' door to say, hey, you need to take down that content, most likely that they would. Another interesting revelations during this war is the level of organized effort, let's say non-state or state-affiliated effort to report content. There's been a couple of revelations around like Israeli-led efforts by individuals or groups that are probably, they are state-affiliated or probably state-funded, who claim that they're using their connections within the companies to take down content, which again emphasizes this shady nature of relationship between the platforms and governments or government-affiliated individuals. So it becomes a question of access. So if you have the resources, you have the access, then you can take down content. If you're an oppressed group or a marginalized group, then good luck. That's not how the system should work.
So you sent a formal letter 2 months ago following a meeting with Meta executives in February. I understand that you raised three key issues. You've already mentioned systematic censorship, silencing of Palestinian voices and Palestinian-related content, Meta's inconsistent response to armed conflict situations. You've already mentioned perhaps how this situation may differ from perhaps the response in Ukraine. And then you've mentioned this third area, the proliferation of hate speech, dehumanization, genocidal rhetoric, and incitement to violence against Palestinians, which exacerbates the likelihood of offline violence, as you say in your letter. Can you speak a little bit about the hate speech piece especially? So on the one hand, you're saying we're seeing more and more kind of takedowns of content that are pro-Palestinian in some context or come from Palestinian sources, but you're seeing on the flip side, not enough takedowns, hate speech or dehumanizing content against Palestinians?
Yeah, exactly. That's the over and under moderation duo being in full action. It's really unconscionable to me that you see a Palestinian photojournalist from Gaza documenting war crimes and potential war crimes and human rights abuses and the killing and of children and women being censored and banned, while you have accounts of settlers calling for the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in the West Bank or Israeli state officials just posting sheer genocidal rhetoric. Or even worse, we've seen one of our partners, Hamle, did this little experiment using targeted advertising. And so they ran a few ads in the system that call for wiping out Gaza or wiping out, calling for the Holocaust of Palestinians, and these ads have been approved. They pulled them back before they were published. But to prove the point that after October 7th, we saw literally an explosion of genocidal rhetoric and hate speech and Islamophobia and also anti-Semitism, which has real consequences. Here in the US, a mother and her child were stabbed multiple times. The child was stabbed 26 times by their landlord. We had three Palestinian students here in the US also shot, luckily survived. And when we're talking about the real situation where there is a real risk of genocide, and again, of course, the court, the ICJ is is looking into that case. But from my perspective, where I stand, what in Gaza is no less than genocide. And so things are extremely volatile. And again, like, platforms are not taking any effort to ensure that the content is removed, not to mention doing any effort to understand whether any of the content they're hosting or allowing to be posted on their platforms are linked to international crimes, like atrocity crimes, war crimes. I'll give you an example. If you scroll down, if you go to the Israeli army page, so the IDF page, whether on Twitter or on Facebook, I've done that exercise myself. Clear disinformation campaigns that aim to justify, for example, attacks on hospitals. So before the attack on Al-Shifa Hospital, the biggest hospital or medical complex in Gaza, now completely annihilated, and there's been, what, 4 mass graves being discovered there. Really, people lived through horrors in that hospital. But before that, there was just piles and piles of content that claims that this was used as a command center by Hamas, and hence it removes its kind of protection under international humanitarian law, and therefore such attacks can be justified. Of course, a big question mark for me is that, and that's what we ask Meta and Nick Clegg specifically, are you doing your human rights due diligence? Are you looking into this type of content and understanding to what extent your services and platform and policies are contributing to these gross human rights abuses and atrocity crimes? And the answer, if you read the letter, does not exist. They just refer to some random ongoing human rights due diligence. The same question we asked, especially after the ICJ ruling back in January this year, where the court, the International Court of Justice, determined that the risk of genocide is imminent and that what's happening in Gaza, it could indeed be a real risk of genocide, and ordered the state of Israel to take measures to prevent the crime of genocide, including stopping incitement to genocide, which, by the way, is a crime on its own. Like, you don't need to commit genocide for incitement to genocide to be a crime. That on its own is a crime and needs to be removed. And then also not obstructing access to humanitarian aid, and as well as not destroying any evidence of war crimes or other human rights abuses. And so we asked Meta, like, what's your assessment of the situation? If I were a lawyer at Meta, that's something I would want to do, to understand to what extent are they being complicit or abetting or aiding the crime of genocide. But at least in their interactions with us, there's been no satisfactory answer at all.
So the company has replied, and it says, quote, that it is guided by core human rights principles, including respect for the right to life and security of person, protection of the dignity of victims, non-discrimination, and freedom of expression, that it, quote, looked to the UN guiding principles on business and human rights as enshrined in our corporate human rights policy to prioritize and mitigate the most salient human rights, and that it, quote, also used international humanitarian law as an important reference in establishing its policy towards this situation. And they also say, quote, obviously in exceptional and fast-moving situations like this one, no response can be perfect, lines are difficult to draw, and people and systems can and will make mistakes. What's been your kind of continued back and forth with them since this exchange? I mean, this is a very formal process, right? You've had a meeting, you've issued a letter, the company has clearly taken you seriously, at least enough to produce a document by reply. Mm. There's various kind of material they provided in response, not necessarily in answer to all of your questions, but at least they appear to be in dialogue with you. Are you hopeful at this point that the situation will change, or do you suspect more of the same going forward? What's it like, these interactions at this point? Is it chilly? Do they pick up the phone when you call?
They do. And to be fair to them, they're quite responsive and engaging. Since October 7th, we have been, and by we, I mean a coalition of civil society groups that formed the Stop Silencing Palestine campaign, which was launched in May 2021. And here we are, again, like demanding the same things from Meta. So we've been meeting with them on a regular basis. And then we quickly realized that, again, like those meetings are not leading to any substantial change. They're not leading to concrete actions. For example, so here's the thing, like you have all the censorship and whatnot, and then you have the hate speech and genocidal rhetoric. And we were asking for specific policy changes. For example, look, you need to have what you call like a newsworthiness allowance. When people are, especially for journalists from Gaza, when they're reporting from the ground, they will be reporting disturbing stuff, graphic stuff. And maybe some might violate your policy, but you need to make exceptions because that is so important. Again, we're talking about an isolated population, a blockaded population where there's, you know, there's been just intermittent shutdowns around the clock, and where, again, like international media doesn't have access. And quite honestly, journalists in Gaza have been doing God's work under unbelievable and inhumane circumstances, whether it be surviving or having their families attacked or going through famine. They're doing everything with their hands to show the world what's happening, and in a context of just widespread disinformation and war propaganda. And the last thing you want is, I don't know, like Instagram, stupid Instagram algorithms to flag your posts, dead children as nudity. That's just unbelievable. So the company, the least that they can do is just have better due diligence, like have extra care in assessing that content. But what have they done? Quite the opposite. They, for example, decided that content that comes from Palestine, and particularly comments, the threshold for their algorithms to detect hate speech or inflammatory content should be reduced to 25% for content generated from Palestine. And Meta knows that their algorithms are all messed up. They're all running amok. And again, like the BSR report from 2021 should make that crystal clear to them. And they're still relying on those tools. They're tinkering with them to the end of suppressing content coming from Palestine. And that's why we wanted to meet with Nick Clegg, because we thought, okay, their human rights teams, their regional folks are all fantastic people. They listen, they want to engage with us, but the decisions need to be made at the top. And we met with Nick Clegg. It was a very quick meeting. We were given like, what, 30 minutes? Literally 30 minutes to discuss all these very important issues that are life or death for some people. That's why we followed up with the letter, because we want answers. We're not there just to give the company a hard time. We really want serious answers about their human rights due diligence efforts. What are they doing to protect people? What are they doing to ensure that the issues we've been talking about for the last 5, 6, 7 years are not repeating themselves again? And mind you, Justin, you'll see very quickly after October 7th that the company's reaction was geared towards removing terrorist content. So they've been just like removing content in bulk. And they've rolled out a few like trust and safety or like safety measures. And if you check their website, last time they've updated their newsroom about their crisis response was in December. And what they also informed us in the letter that some of those measures, like safety measures that they've taken, were temporary and were lifted. So, but the genocide is continuing. It's May. So it seems to me even their reaction to the October 7th attack was mainly geared towards protecting Israeli users or focusing on the Hamas attack per se, and not what's happening in Gaza. I don't find any other explanation as to why they're not putting the same effort into that in their crisis response. Even worse, and that feels really like a slap in the face, that after all this time, like all these months, again, time and time again, campaigning, meeting with them in private, public, And the only action they came up with and they wanted to consult us on was whether they should protect Zionists under their hate speech policy. So again, it's clear that they are looking at their options, but only for one group over the other. And that just emphasizes on the discriminatory nature of their response and their actions. Yeah, am I hopeful that the companies would correct course? Not really, but I also think that this is an uphill battle, and even though change is painfully slow, we can't let companies off the hook. We need to hold them accountable to their words. And I'm sorry, human rights and the UN guiding principles on business and human rights and international law and all of that is not just some slogans that you can have on your website or in some glossy human rights reports. They're there for you to action. And in the Palestine context, as we discussed for the past few minutes, like that's definitely not the case.
One of your partners on this letter is Mnemonic, which is known for its documentation of war crimes, in particular in Syria, the Syrian archive and other archives that it's created around the world. I know it's been active also in documenting war crimes in Ukraine. What response has the platforms given you on that, or Meta in particular? Are they being useful to efforts to preserve material that may be useful in war crimes proceedings in future?
Yeah, that's one of the campaign's main demands, that content needs to be preserved and it needs to be accessible for future accountability and justice efforts. Meta and their response to us told us that they're currently, can't remember the right wording that they used for us, but that they are going to preserve content and make it accessible, but they are not consulting with civil society on that point. So we don't know exactly what the system that they're using and whether it be will it be accessible by civil society. And yeah, it's pretty much opaque. Similar to their also crisis response, it's really opaque. No one knows what their crisis policy is, like crisis protocols. We just know that they've launched them, I believe, in August last year or sometime in 2023. But we don't have, as civil society, any insights into that, which doesn't inspire much confidence to the level of archiving, that the company is doing.
So the company does say that, quote, we support justice for all international crimes, and that it has publicly stated that it will work to develop an approach to allow international courts and accountability mechanisms to make requests, et cetera, but points to complications, significant legal, privacy, and policy considerations inherent in that work, and suggests that the oversight board will continue to work on those matters. Have you had any interaction with the oversight board itself?
We did. Yeah, we did. The oversight board has, as they've issued, so they've looked into two cases for the first time, but what was the word? Didn't ask for input from civil society. It was just like an accelerated case review, one regarding Al-Shifa Hospital and one regarding Israeli hostages. And those decisions were very important. And again, like pinpointing how companies' decisions or content moderation actions have been flawed. Interestingly enough, for me, the two cases were separate, right? What the board did not make it extremely clear is that, for example, in the Israeli hostage case, where Meta's reaction is like any content showing or identifying hostages, which is a violation, would be a violation of international humanitarian law, should be removed, should not be allowed on that platform. But then they quickly realized that actually the families of those hostages and other advocates are using their pictures or their content to highlight their plight and also to fight against disinformation, etc. And so they made an allowance. They made an exception to that rule. Such exceptions have not been made to content coming from Palestine. Now the board is looking into another interesting case on the use of the slogan "From the River to the Sea," which, for people following, you know, the implications of the Gaza war around the world, this slogan has been so charged and so criminalized and banned even in multiple places. In Germany, where I live, the Ministry of Justice a couple of days ago declared that this is a Hamas slogan, and therefore any use of it will be a criminal offense, even though multiple courts, including in Germany, had ruled that the use of the slogan is protected by freedom of expression. So it's interesting now to look at how the board will look into that case and what they will rule. As you can imagine, there will be two polarized opinions on this. And finally, I would say the board's decision or advisory opinion on the moderation of the word Shaheed is a timely one, even though it took them a long time since they've announced that case, where Meta asked them for their opinion about how they should tackle that word. And Shaheed in Arabic, I think the closest translation to it in English means martyr. But in the Palestinian context, we literally refer to anyone who has been killed by the Israeli forces as a Shaheed. We don't use the word kill or killed or dead. We just say Shaheed. And this word accounts for most content removals under all of Meta's community standards, so across all of their content moderation policies, which just is shocking, but at the same time really just points to the disproportionate impact of Meta's policies on Palestinians and Arabic speakers at large. And the board in their decision made it very clear that Meta's actions right now are disproportionate and are rights violating, and the ban should be lifted, and it should have a more nuanced approach to tackling how to tackle that word. So yeah, I think the board is taking on a few emblematic cases, which I hope would result in policy changes, not just like in leaving content up or down, but in addressing the systematic censorship and the biased content moderation policies.
Well, we will see if that is the case. What is next in your campaign? What can we expect from Access Now in the next couple of months?
We will continue with our advocacy for sure. We'll continue with our documentation work. We will also, currently we're working on a case study that examines platforms' accountability under international humanitarian law and criminal law. So we'll look at the implications, hopefully, of the implications of the ICJ ruling on platforms and what they need to address. And I'm personally really looking forward to the study coming out, because not only there is a gap in the normative framework around platforms operating in armed conflict, but we need to also look at the gaps and how they are, and how companies are probably being complicit in multiple violations. So there is that. And we will have a letter addressed to Google in a couple of days regarding Project Nimbus and their possible complicity in abetting or aiding atrocity crimes with providing their cloud computing services and automation to the Israeli Ministry of Defense and the Israeli government at large, which I'm sure you've seen the very tech from hell types of reports showing how the Israelis are using AI to automatically generate targets and generate kill lists, and that led to wiping out families and decimating entire neighborhoods. We'll be knocking on Google's door very soon, demanding transparency and really just disclosure on their services. But yeah, we're also working on shutdowns, but don't want to hold you for another hour talking about our future work. But yeah, these are some of the stuff that we're working on at the moment.
Mara Fatafta, I appreciate you taking the time to speak to me today.
Yeah, of course. My pleasure. Thanks for reaching out.
That's it for this episode. I hope you'll send your feedback. You can write to me at justin@techpolicy.press. Thanks to my guest, thanks to my co-founder, Brian Jones, and thank you for listening.
Tech Policy Press.